Right, so this is the tech and neo-imperialism tea party, where we're going to try and solve the questions of both colonialism and technology in approximately an hour. It's premised heavily on the decision by the Indian telecoms regulator to not allow free basics by Facebook in India, but we'll kind of move from that to other issues as we go along. I'll just introduce the speakers. We have four, and do I need to crouch like this? It's going to be a... I'll keep going like this.
You're 6 foot seven.
Yes. All right. Not sitting down,
if
I am.
Not crouching, then you know there's something wrong with this
too. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, so I'll introduce everyone. This is Nandan Nilekani, co-founder of Infosys, chairman of the Unique Identification Authority of India, former chairman, which was... the idea there was they were going to introduce the Aadhaar card across India, which was a biometric card for all Indian citizens. And he is now chairperson and co-founder of Eggstep Foundation, which uses tech to bring education to India's youth. Richard Allen, he's Facebook's director of policy in Europe, member of the of Parliament with the Lib Dems, was a member of Parliament with the Lib Dems, and a lifelong peer. Mihir Sharma, recently of Bloomberg, which makes this awkward. When I invited him, he wasn't. He's one of India's foremost financial commentators. His book, Restart, tore strips out of India's policymakers. It's great. And to my right, Brett Scott. I don't know if he fully agrees with that. A counterculture observer of finance and author of Heretic's Guide to Global Finance. He okayed this description. This is from his bio. So I worked as a broker, barman, and blues musician, and a fellow at the Finance Innovation Lab. Okay, everyone knows each other. This is the last panel of the day, so we'll try and make it as interactive as possible. If anyone wants to ask anything at any stage, just get my attention. I suppose it would probably be a better idea if everyone wasn't behind me, but just yell or something. Yeah, that's true. Well, I'll sit sideways in a second, but I'm afraid to knock another beer over. Right, so I'm going to start off by making Richard slightly awkward and read out a series of tweets by Mark Andreessen, Facebook board member, VC, pillar of Silicon Valley, and a man who put his foot in his mouth last February. He reacted somewhat rashly to India's telecom regulator blocking Facebook's free basic scheme after they banned it based on differential pricing issues, which is a net neutrality thing. We'll get into that in a second. This is what he tweeted. He said, denying world's poorest free partial internet connectivity when today they have none for ideological reasons strikes me as morally wrong. He said, another in a long line of economically suicidal decisions made by the Indian government against its own citizens. And then he said, anti-colonialism has been economically catastrophic for the Indian people for decades. Why stop now? Wasn't incredibly smart, to be honest. He did apologize. He said, I'm 100% opposed to colonialism and 100% in favor of independence and freedom in any country, including India. And he apologized for any offense my comment caused and withdrew it in full and without reservation. But the damage was done and it went down particularly poorly in India. I suppose we'll divide this conversation, though, into three parts. The first will be about Facebook and the regulator's decision. The second will be about Mark's kind of idea that India has some sort of overhang from colonialism that kind of makes it act against its own best interests. And the third will be maybe about why tech is different in this sense, in its ability to create natural monopolies potentially. So I'm going to ask Richard first to basically talk about what Facebook wanted to do with free basics in India and why or if he disagrees with the regulator's decision.
So thanks for that. I think when you think about free basics, it's important to look at it through an engineer's eyes. So there's a lot of sort of theorizing about it and what it means. Actually, at its basic level, it was an engineer's solution to an acknowledged problem. And the logic went like this. You know, there have been all kinds of deals for zero rating of access to internet services on mobile networks for years. Actually, 10 years ago, I bought a phone that gave me free Skype. With my 3G network here in the UK. So we looked at a problem. The problem was affordability of internet access, and we looked at solutions that had been out there in the market, which included reducing the cost of the internet access, kind of seems pretty obvious. And a software engineer said, how can we put this together? particularly for those parts of the world where people have access to 2 and 3G networks, which actually is most of the world, but are not today choosing to buy internet access. They're using it just for voice and text. And so what we came up with was this scheme to offer a certain amount of internet access for free. Some critics have said, well, why isn't it all of the internet access for free? And frankly, if we thought that operators would do that, you know, give away all of the internet for free, that would have been a great way to go. But our assumption was mobile phone operators, who are the people who own the infrastructure and who can provide sustainable access for people right around the world, they're the ones who can actually deliver this, would not want to give away everything for free. But if we came up with a package that they felt comfortable giving away for free that would then act as a taster to get people onto the internet, that would be a win-win. Everyone would be happy. The operators would be happy because they've got a way of effectively marketing to potential internet users and getting them onto full internet. We'd be happy because we'd be doing our bit to expand internet access. As it turned out, quite a few people were unhappy, and therein lies the tale.
And then you were one of those people who were definitely unhappy with this idea. Would you talk us through why and why the regulator was correct?
No, I think I believe that having a free and open internet is very important, and making internet accessible to everybody is also very important, and there are many ways to address that, connectivity, prices, direct transfers, so on. I think the challenge or the thing that was concerning here was that essentially one company was creating a free product and deciding which websites would be on that. And ultimately, you see, I think the big thing in the last 10 years is that the internet has gone from an open platform to being controlled by a few large corporations. And our view was that in India, when we are this incipient stage where we need to provide access to everybody, you should provide it in a net neutral way where you separate out the content from the pipes. And I think India has been very, very, unlike China, which has essentially blocked all these companies. I mean, Facebook cannot operate in China. Google can't operate in China. Amazon doesn't have much of a presence in China. Apple's iTunes and music has been shut down in China, and so on. So China has taken a view that internet is too critical, and they have essentially blocked foreign companies and created their own domestic champions like Baidu, Alibaba, and Tencent. India actually has been a very open economy, has allowed and encouraged foreign in thing. Facebook today has more than 100 million users using Facebook and WhatsApp. Google Android is on every phone. Amazon is now, you know, very strong contender in e-commerce. Uber is very big. So I think India has been very open. But at some point, that has to be kept open and not dominated by these kind of packages. The internet has to be neutral. And there should not really be these links between the telecom guys and a company and essentially end up creating more walled gardens. I think that was the point. And that there are alternate ways of fixing the problem. This whole notion that this is the only way to fix the problem is wrong.
I suppose my first reaction when I saw this decision, and I'll go to Mihir very quickly on this, was that it did kind of, like the consumer, the guy who wants free internet, is getting walked over a little bit. How do you... Like, do you think the regulator kind of...
Well, I think that in India, we have a... Is this on? Okay, good. In India, we have this lovely tendency, especially the Indian elite that essentially runs this country, to be able to frame things that... It's him. To be able to frame things that help, the elite's own interests in the highest level, you know, at the highest level of self-righteousness possible. And usually they, you know, pick up the language of the Western left or the Western, you know, Western liberals in order to make that case. So here, for example, you had a bunch of people who essentially benefit from the new net neutrality because they run small startups, none of which is ever going to make any money, but that's besides the point.
Who are we talking about here?
We're talking about the leadership of and the people who really pushed and lobbied the regulator at the time when this decision was being taken to ensure that net neutrality was a principle, all right, that had to be respected. And the leadership of this was essentially, and the entire component of it, in fact, was people who benefit from directly the ability to ensure that their startup is put on the same level as Facebook. Now, I'm sure that's important, right? Now, it's the regulator's job to weigh that desire for an open market, you know, between these guys and people with more money, to weigh that against what a consumer needs. And in India, when you have consumers who basically struggle to pay that lump sum amount that require, you know, that data costs, you're denying them the ability to get a minimal package for free. And I just think that it is an inexplicable choice, and nor did the regulator defend it in any way that is comprehensible. Okay, and so it is a class. It's just another example of regulation by the elite in India for elite interests, and yet framed in this extraordinarily self-righteous manner that is incredibly
irritating.
You're
taking about four shots at him here. I think you got to defend yourself, sir.
I think he's become a shill for MNCs. I mean.
See, there you go.
I think this is a ridiculous argument because the fact of the matter is that nobody is opposing free, wide internet, but it cannot be done.
You just banned it, so, yeah.
No. I think there are many ways to do it in a far more market-neutral way. And I don't think he really understands how digital markets work, how winner-takes-all networks happen, how digital monopolies can happen, how those monopolies can then use a monopoly position. I don't think Mayer really understands all that.
And I think that fundamentally Nandan and the group of people he represents still think of monopolies in a particular and very outdated way. You imagine that Uber or a platform monopoly is somehow like AT&T, and it really is not, all right? The costs of switching away from Uber for customers are much lower.
Come on.
All right, and you cannot give me, nobody can give me a monetary difference or a quantitative difference in between network monopolies in the digital world and network monopolies in the real world, and try to demonstrate why that means we should treat them differently.
I think ask any media company that can only sell through Facebook and Google what they feel.
No, it's not because it's Facebook or Google. It's because it's online.
Over here, but,
you're hurting over.
Okay, so, let's go ahead.
So, is that your basic?
I'm looking to discover data that they are as powerful as people claim them to be, which is a substantively different thing.
Who here uses Uber? Who here uses an alternative to Uber?
Well, I use Ola, but I'm not sure where I am.
Exactly.
Who here uses...
There you go, right there.
Who here uses
I'm
Google?
I'm an impartial observer. Yeah.
Who here uses Google? Who uses an alternative to Google? Okay, so
you're just being contrarian with that one, Mahir.
These network corporations. I think we know that they are not pure monopolies. It's not the same as your water utilities, but they are effectively monopolies.
Why do you use Google?
Because it is a good that actually.
Are you using it because your neighbor uses it, or are you using it because it gets you better results?
Because my neighbor uses it.
Really. You think that that's why you're using it? Because you knock on his door in the morning and say...
No, no. Right, it gets better results because our neighbors use it.
Yeah. So one of the interesting terms was used by David was the consumer. I do not believe anybody has ever made a consumer choice when it comes to, for example, Facebook or Google. Have you ever... let's look at what an actual consumer choice is. I walk into a guitar shop in New Orleans and look at an old Gibson guitar and decide whether the price I'm paying for it is worthwhile or not. And I go through some kind of heartwarming process with the salesperson. Nobody has ever had that experience with something like Facebook or Google. These are services that are pushed to you for free. It's a bit like when you're on the tube and somebody shoves an Evening Standard in your face. There's no consumption process going on here.
Richard.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. But the key difference is that when something is free, this choice is quite a sort of strange and abstract one. I mean, do you characterize it? Okay, we can go into this point of whether this is a choice or not after this here.
Yeah, I mean,
I think when you can do two things, then it's a choice.
And I was going to say, I mean, companies like ours are extremely successful, but the idea that there's some kind of enduring strength that you have, I think, is not felt certainly in the sector. And actually, the kind of trend is towards multi-homing, the fancy word. But people have so much attention in a day, and that attention is spread across a whole range of different platforms. Ours is one of them, happens to be pretty successful, but there is this massive range, and
the switching costs, as we said, between one and another. Actually, you don't even need to switch. You can use them all at the same time. So to your Evening Standard analogy, it's like there are 50 newspapers thrust at you. You know, one happens to be the foremost one right now, but the others are just as accessible and available at exactly the same price. Ours is no cheaper than all of the other Evening Standards that are being thrust at you.
Let's drag it back very quickly to the winner-takes-all model. And you mentioned Uber and Ola, right? So the idea here is that network effects, one of these guys wins enough share of the market, it will dominate the market, and the other guy will be kicked out. You think that's false?
Again, if you imagine that the assumption underlying something like Uber is, okay, we're giving you a sort of predatory pricing right now, we're going to create the network, and once you're all on that network, we're going to somehow suck all the surplus out of you, right? That's the idea. I mean, that's what everyone thinks Uber's up to. When they create that network, why would someone like Ola once again not come along and say, wait, you cannot suck all the surplus out of people? What is the cost, actually, to creating another Ola, to creating a competitor to Uber?
Yeah, enormous, I would argue.
No, but what is the what is the cost? What is the cost given the payoff?
Your own industry, let's talk about it, right? you're a journalist and a content guy. In the last 10 years, the entire value of media has been captured by two companies, Facebook and Google. They have 80% market share of advertising. And the whole content industry has been destroyed. And newspapers are getting sold. And all that stuff is happening. And today they have no choice about distribution because it's all tied up to two companies. And you want that to happen?
Not in India. It's not happening in India.
Yeah, but it'll
happen. But you have to ask why it's not happening in India. You have to ask, therefore...
No, all online is only happening through these two companies.
Let's
be clear.
Let's look at the Evening Standard analogy. Would you want to stop people from handing out anything free? Any free newspapers on the subway?
I think you're very nice.
Personally, yes.
I think you're very nice.
Huh? Personally, yes. Well, there you go. Exactly.
I think, Meher, you're very naive. You don't understand this. You're being very naive. You don't understand how these markets operate. You don't understand when platforms become dominant, how they weaponize them and do things. You should be a little more...
Let's give
Nandan a second just to talk that out a bit. Where does your fear lie? Is it in this kind of winner-takes-all idea? And when
No.
Has that ever has that ever been broken in the past, if you see what I mean?
No. I'm not getting into Facebook or Fear Basic. I'm just saying that no one company should create the pipe to millions of people because then they can mess with that pipe, which has already happened. For example, what Facebook did in India was they got their customers to send messages to the regulator saying that I love Free Basics or whatever it was. Now that's weaponization. You're using your own platform to lobby for your own business. They're just not on. You can't do that.
Richard?
So, a campaign was run because the view was taken that, as we discussed earlier, that the service we're offering was of significant benefit to people. There was a
public
debate about it.
That's weaponization. You're using your own platform to lobby for yourself. You can't do that. A platform has to not be lobbying for itself.
I think you would admit that there is a percentage of this, a large percentage of it that wasn't altruistic. Like Mark Zuckerberg threw his weight behind this. Usually, if you walked around Bombay during this period, it was like you would see, there was billboards all the way through like Dharavi. And I mean, we tried to find them after you guys tried to take them all down. We found a few. It was good. But I mean, how much of this was self-serving and is now, are you trying to wrap this up in altruism after the fact?
No, you can overthink it. So Mark, I was there actually when Mark sort of launched the whole internet.org initiative, and Mark's view was, we've built a fantastically successful social network that we think is now meeting, the needs of most of the people who are connected, but we have this huge unconnected population. I personally would like to do what I can using the power of my company to try and connect those people. And it's not connect them just for Facebook's benefit, it's connect them because they will benefit. He's a true believer. He's a true believer that connectivity is good for people. And so he's tried to use the power of the company to connect people. People can suspect those motives, but I work with a guy and his motives were he wants to connect people. And the assumption was people would use these free packages. Because it's free, it costs them nothing to try it. They pick up their free Evening Standard. But having tried it, they will then go on to buy. And it's the buying from the telecoms companies that creates a sustainable sort of onward internet economy. And so we never imagined people would stop there. There is a sort of effect of trying to pull people in, using the amazing marketing power we have as an attractive proposition to get people onto the internet. And then they're going to use that massive array of services and benefit much more broadly.
Can
people
I
don't want that proposition.
Ask a question
but that was
on So as far as I understand, Facebook's business model essentially involves offering a useful service that's free as a way to attract tons of people to come in. That in turn has now become culturally embedded in our society, such to a point where if you are a 16-year-old person, you have absolutely no choice whether you're on that platform or not. All right, you'll literally be born into the system. And right now, maybe we can imagine we have some kind of choice, but I guarantee you in 10 years' time, nobody being born in society will imagine any choice. Potentially, there's a chance it could be disrupted, but I'm very skeptical about that. Now, once you have those people, you're essentially effectively selling their data as a way they become the product.
Oh.
Or you're selling services on top of that, or you're selling basically access to those people for the various groups on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if I was the CEO of Facebook, my long-term trajectory would be, how do I target very, very large untapped markets and get people on board such that for our long-term trajectory, for our share price, because you're a shareholder-driven business after all, our major interest is to get them to view our platform as the default way to interact with the internet.
I think that's really
yes. No.
I mean, this is a pretty straightforward.
Because if you say no, the shareholders are going to be upset.
Well, no, but you're reversing the logic. So again, the founder's vision is he would like everybody in the world to be connected to Facebook. He would like Facebook to provide value. And your proposition, that a teenager wants Facebook. A teenager needs a mobile phone. These are sort of tools that we connect with. He wants to connect everyone in the world. We need a business model that sustains that connectivity. And we've got a business model, and we're trying to make money. But we're not building the product to make money. We're making money to build the product. And that really is the philosophy inside the company. That's exactly where we're
starting. Jonathan.
To hear about your altruism, but if it was real, I'm really delighted. I'm not on Facebook, but it's very astonishing to hear a multinational company talking purely about altruism, in which case then you should probably shell out philanthropic capital to get people connected and not have it at all connected to your line of business. That's what I do when I do philanthropy. It doesn't come back and bounce back towards me and my company. But really, I think one of the ways to shift this question to its real problem is, if we keep talking about ourselves as consumers, you face one set of problems. But when we begin to think of ourselves as citizens and not just as consumers, the whole question changes. When there are so many utilities built on a platform that is run by a private entity, in what way does it affect me as a citizen? I'd really like the panel to take a look at that question.
I get it. And again, the boss has given away his money and is going to give away his money personally for philanthropic enterprises. But as a business, But I think there is a divide. I think we and other businesses like ours believe it's perfectly compatible to have a core mission, which is to offer great value services to people, and to make that a business at the same time. There are some people who think you can't combine those two, that somehow the business will interfere with or corrupt that mission of connecting people. But we think the long-term sustainable value for a citizen is super cheap mobile connectivity and then super cheap services on top of that. And that's going to reach the most people. There are lots of people for whom affordability is an issue. We want to offer it as cheap as possible. The ad model allows us to offer it cheap.
Whatever Facebook may have been actually thinking, it was a terrible choice to present it as altruism. Yeah. Or to present it as altruism. Because nobody is going to believe that. All right? For whatever reason.
We haven't heard the question. Well, no, I was going to... is this thing working? What I was going to say, I think we're talking about this like it's a consumer marketing question. I think I side with Nandan on this, that...
You are also a member of the Indian elite.
Fair enough. This is
a very easy thing. Yeah? If you oppose, you become part of elite.
You're very frustrated with the Telecom Regulations Authority, but I think it's not a consumer question. It became a net neutrality question, and it was only at that point that Facebook lost, in a way, when that campaign.
No, you're talking about how the framing was effective, which is exactly what I said.
But I think the more interesting question, to take it away from free basics per se, is that. Is there something unique to tech that, A, makes it a bigger picture regulatory problem? It's not simply like an antitrust question
Absolutely.
Or monopoly question.
Absolutely.
And B, is there something about tech companies, however idealistic or whatever we want to say, that makes it difficult for them to understand, as our friend Mark Andreessen demonstrated, that
people in foreign countries might not see this necessarily as the greatest gift that anyone could give to them? Is there something about tech runs into those two problems simultaneously?
Let's just clarify. We're not talking about tech. We just assume tech, but it's digital tech. It's internet technology, aka computers linked up with telecommunications. This is the real new beast in the world. It's not technology per se. But to kind of go to your point, I mean, if I was to take a zoom out on this picture, I'm seeing a kind of a clash of two, maybe three value systems. You have your idea of like the citizen, the person who's a part of a community and a group and actually makes decisions. Then we have like the sort of the state, which may or may not represent that entity or those people, depending on your view of the state. And then we have this kind of this new wave of something that's coming out of Silicon Valley, which is this kind of how do you put it? An Iron Man complex, a sort of a techno-evangelistic or techno-libertarian evangelism, or sort of savior of the world. Now we've had these visions before, but we've never had them on such an epic scale before. So actually, in 2 weeks' time, I'm going to Singularity University to do some lecturing there. And Singularity University is this university which tries to impact a billion people. That's your goal. No government's ever tried to impact a billion people before. Other than there's two governments. Well, I was gonna say there are two governments. There are two governments in the world. Okay, so that's actually an ideal thing. This is the first time we've had a company can actually get to that level, and this is a fundamentally new thing.
You know? If you're a poor guy in India, I'm sure you wouldn't say no to a bit of Silicon Valley evangelical spirit, right?
I mean, I'm not necessarily making a judgment. I'm just saying this is a case that's coming through. The key difference between if an ideal state is theoretically a state is supposed to be able to channel the opinions of its citizens, whereas what we got here is Mark Zuckerberg's opinion being channeled into people.
A very bad way of putting it.
I think our argument has been summarized in those two lines. But we're going to have to talk about colonialism at some stage. But
sorry.
You're good. Can I also just jump in on the Silicon Valley's value point that it is actually a very gendered position, that actually can be quite pernicious, and especially Google and their recent aim to kind of filter content so that sexualized images don't appear. I think maybe it'd be interesting to touch on that.
Say that one more time. So it's the idea that
it's not just Mark.
I think you can't hear your own volume. Okay. Sorry.
I think it's not just that it's Mark Zuckerberg's opinion. It's that it's a male engineer opinion. Yeah. It's a Silicon Valley problem that actually is quite pernicious, especially for a younger generation, because it conditions the way they see themselves as being viewed by others, not as acting in the world and then having that being received by the world, and it's actually quite a destructive sense of self that you're projecting.
I'll go back
to the all male. Yeah, panel, by the way.
Yeah, to the all male group. There is an awareness. There is an awareness of that. That is inside the industry. So again, I'm sitting here defending an industry that everyone wants to throw stuff at, and we're kind of big enough to take it. But there is a lot of things that are wrong. Still, and gender is one of those issues that, again, the companies have published gender statistics. We're very focused on it. Our COO, Sheryl Sandberg, is extremely focused. The whole company does unconscious bias training, etc. So we are far from perfect, but I still think, you know, to kind of say we're at the back of the queue rather than, you know, companies that are doing quite well and are struggling to do even better.
Is the fact that you present it as neutral that's so problematic?
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
No different from the online and offline.
Yeah,
it's
a long way from perfect, but I think the awareness of that lack of perfection is at least reasonably high in our companies. That's all I can say.
And actually, the engineering mentality. I mean, I studied my original thing I was doing was international development, and the engineering perspective is very much analyze the world in terms of these kind of sort of apolitical problems, and then sort of deploy solutions to sort of combat them. But actually, any development problem can never be targeted by sort of dropping stuff on it. For example, you cannot solve poverty by dropping technology. Poverty is a multifaceted thing that relies on education, political systems, some element of technology. But the mentality that comes out of Silicon Valley, and I'm not saying it's always wrong, is very much, we will sort of parachute in a whole bunch of stuff which will somehow fix this problem. And are there political elements to this? No.
It's digital tech that's the issue. It's any new industry where regulation is yet to catch up. And we had the big debate over informing ourselves to death when television and all those sorts of things, and you've got a whole community where people are now being bombarded with other people's views without necessarily the time to evaluate them. And whether we think how much the globalization of all this information that people get, and actually it seems that people aren't really informed because there's too much information, too many wrong views. We've seen some of that happen in the past few weeks. And we're going to have the same, even if the platform itself is neutral, we're going to have people use it in a way that destroys our culture in a certain way. People don't necessarily understand how best to use Facebook, and you find children going on it, not being educated by their parents, being addicted, and schooling, education hasn't caught up, regulations haven't caught up, and I don't think the companies that you're involved with are doing enough to support our politicians to actually regulate yourselves. I think you can be doing more to regulate yourselves. I think you should be telling our politicians what more they should be doing in the classrooms to educate children about the vulnerabilities of the social networks that you provide.
I think Richard's getting unfairly slapped here on off topics, but he can stand up for himself.
No, but I think I think the problem is that they've put themselves in this position. They can't just step back now and say, "Oh, you know what? You know what? We are just a company. Why are you yelling at us?" All right. If they had started off by saying, "We're a company. We're in this to make money. Can you please regulate it in such a regulate the business in such a way we can make money and everybody else can benefit, just like anybody else would have," they wouldn't be being attacked from all sides. I think the problem is that they put themselves out there as, "Hey guys, all right, we are now here, and you know, the farmer will have internet, and you know, the slum dweller will have internet, and blah 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 blah." So this is completely unnecessary. So they sort of their ask for it.
Although do you think? I mean, I agree with you on this point, but I'm very like edgy about calling Facebook just a company. I mean, just a company is, for example, you know, the guy they're running a store selling you coffee. There's something different, authentically different about these companies. They're not just companies.
This was one of the fears in India in this piece. It was that Facebook could, by taking a dominant position at the start, it would control how Indians interacted with information, got information. I have no idea if that fear was or is overblown at all.
We're all learning together, and I think that you just described my job, which is precisely. But my job is, and I'm clearly failing to get the message through. My job is precisely to work with governments, not to tell them what to do, but to you know, give them the information they need to try and catch up with where things are today. And there is a real challenge. How do I find governments? I actually find like they are struggling in a lot of cases. And again, I want to be really clear. We are just a company in terms of political power, and the authority rests with governments. It doesn't rest with us, and that's quite right. And we have to respond to governments. And you know, the India experience is a classic example of where we found out that very forcibly the government is supreme. But I think we accept that. And our job is to try and help them navigate through that. What we often find, and this is where it does sound, and there is a risk that companies like ours sound arrogant, because we often find that the solutions that governments initially propose are unrealistic, and we're having to explain to them why they're unworkable. And that sounds like us, you know, thinking we're cleverer than government. And when those debates play out.
I think you were just out-lobbied in India. I mean,
you know, various folks here have described kind of what went wrong. I think, honestly, we walked into something that was more complex than we thought. We did have a pretty simple view of the world. We're creating this win-win product. Everyone's going to be happy. And actually, it's deployed in a bunch of other countries, and everybody is happy. You know, we've not had the problems. And then we came to India, it was a more complex environment.
And then you say, "I love Facebook." How do you know that they're happy?
I can tell you that that I went on this program called Al Jazeera something or the other, which is full of tweets about this subject, and thousands of those tweets were coming in to me from Africa saying, "You guys don't want it, send it here. You guys don't want it, send it here."
How do you know?
I don't think that this guy was paying for.
How do you know that auto-generated tweets?
Because boss, I can tell you the difference between auto. I'm facing those all the time.
Shouldn't make it about Facebook. Yeah, so I feel kind of bad for it. We're going to make it about colonialism in a second. Yeah. So all the English people here.
I can tell you it's not about Facebook because try put inside their regulation that everyone here is praising the ability for mobile phone operators to, in fact, provide zero rating for their own products. All right? So, in fact, what we have effectively done through our regulation is take all the other people out.
Correct.
What do you think? That's not correct.
Well, hold on. Let's let Nanda.
It was written there.
Just say that private networks don't come in.
Private networks are being defined as we speak as things run by mobile phone.
Let's do a classic comment response format. Mahir, if you want
to. He's misrepresenting the statement. That's all.
Okay.
And Nandan is misinformed as to what is happening. All right.
I don't think so. Let's go on from this.
I think one thing I'd like to ask very quickly, though, is do you think there will be in the future more and more companies playing this kind of national card in India? I don't know if you guys have noticed over the last while, Ola has decided to kind of, for the first time, I think, really start accusing Uber of being a foreign company. It seems like that's a card Indian companies haven't played aggressively and may now start to play a bit more.
Well, if you open the door to that kind of thing, then sure, why shouldn't? I mean, Ola's owners are going to sit around and say, why should we make common calls with Uber? Let's shove them out. And if we can shove them out by getting regulatory approval for us instead of them because we're, you know, Indian run, then sure. There's no difference between that and much of the motivation behind the anti-free basics movement.
No, I don't think that's correct. What he's saying is not true. The thing is that I think India has actually been a very, very open market for digital technology, much more so than any other country, and certainly much more so than China. I mean, if you have seen the kind of issues these companies have gone through in China, it's quite staggering, and they've just been put out. India, I think, has been very open, and I think that openness requires some reciprocity in saying that we are glad that you're letting us be open and giving us access to markets, and we would like to follow a set of ground rules. And that violation of the ground rules is what is making people upset. For example, you cannot use your platform to lobby for yourself. What you've done then is you're no longer a quote-unquote neutral platform. You're using your 1 billion users to send auto messages about some. Now, tomorrow, think about it. Tomorrow you can use that for elections. You can say, okay, I'll send messages to vote for X or Y. You know, I mean, these are very, very dangerous things. And if you think that you're above the law, above the state, then I think then you will have a challenge. That's exactly what is happening now. And it's happening not just in India, it's happening across the world.
I don't see how, I mean, while they were completely correct, while you were completely correct in saying that it was a misuse of their platform and they should have been slapped down for it, I don't think that means that they were above the state. They were still lobbying the state and they lost.
But you can't use a platform for lobbying.
I agree with you. Your inference from that they were above the state is
wrong.
That
means you can do something else tomorrow, right?
Okay, we've got about 15 minutes left, so I'm going to break the colonial argument in a second here, so apologies for that. But if anyone has any questions or wants to interact or ask anything, do just please put your hand up, or if you're behind me. Do you mind just introducing yourself for the panel as well?
Yeah, for sure. Hi, I'm Adam. I work in a tech startup. I'm really intrigued on the free basics front, Richard. If Facebook chose, then you could sponsor a minimum amount of data. You could give everyone a 5 meg allowance. And because Facebook's such an addictive product and such a compelling value proposition to people who want to look at it, you know, 70% of people check it every day, 30% of usage of mobiles is on Facebook. Surely most of that free data would go to Facebook anyway. Why would you not take that route?
Because it's not our data to give. The data is the operator's data to give. I mean, a simple answer. So we are trying to expand connectivity. And you're right, we could say we're going to pay for everybody in the world's data, be expensive. We're trying to expand to another 2 billion people, so that would get quite expensive. We were looking for what we thought was a really low-cost way of doing it, which is that the operator in this case is willing to give away this limited access in the hope that the operator will then later get a subscription from the individual. So that's the simple answer. You're right, there is that alternative model of paying for the free data has to be paid for. We would pay for the free data, but we didn't think that was scalable for 2 billion people. That's what we were looking for, the big impact. Or sustainable, put it that way.
Okay. But I guess the limit, so the limit would be in place either way, right? It would either be a limit on data or it'd be a limit on type of usage.
And as I said, if operators wanted to give away a bunch of data, that's also another great solution. As we have no problem with that. It's all about lowering the cost of data to get people who live in the range of a mobile data network but have never thought that the value proposition was sufficient for them to buy data. How do we get them to take that first step? Free Basics was one model. Giving away data would be another model. These are all good models that should be tried. Say we had one experiment, wasn't acceptable in India, is acceptable in dozens of other countries around the world, and is doing what we hoped it would do, which is people take that free package. And then the compelling bit is, as soon as they want to go outside the free package, the operator can upsell them then a data subscription. So that's the trick, and that seems to be working well.
I see you use the term value proposition. I'm still just really not convinced that these are products that we're talking about. Who of you has ever thought about Facebook as being a product that you use? Let's put it this way. Have any of you ever imagined yourself engaging in a transaction with Facebook?
When I have to pay for it, to pay for the data for it, then sure.
So some people do. But I mean, I'm the actual business model here. So let's just be clarified on this debate. We should be clarified about what's going on. You offer the free product, the free service, that you can create a separate product somewhere else. The real market is the selling of access to people who've given free services. And we can't talk about these as being consumers. And I think a lot of the debate is being talked about as if there was some kind of market process going on here, which I just don't see.
No, but the other bit, the bit I was talking about, is the bit where you have to pay 100 rupees or 200 rupees to get access to the internet.
That's totally
the bit I think we're talking about in the context of free basics,
that's a real barrier.
That's
consumers, and because you're shutting off consumer choice to the possibility of free data, however limited it may be. So consumers of data, you're consumers of data.
And also the way people consume data in India is a little different to other countries, or maybe it's certainly developed countries. You will find people literally going into shops to have movies downloaded, and they'll buy it in particular chunks.
The thing that irks people, I don't want to turn this into a big, but this goes to tech companies more generally. The thing that irks people, for example, in the hacker community, about what's going on here, is these services are pushed for free, and then people become dependent upon them. They build their lives around them. And then what happens is that the real value proposition comes out, which is that there is a long-term process at play whereby in creating the dependency, you then create the ability to extract value in various ways. And that's the real political issue here for people.
I want to come back on that. Oh, sorry, power question.
And at least in a normal market transaction, it's up front.
Yeah.
You might just have to share it, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
But not telling people what its business model actually is.
That's not.
It's a real-time transaction.
So there is a natural monopoly. Network effects mean that you end up with one Facebook, one Google, one eBay, one Amazon. If you put a big wall around a country like China, you also end up with one of these products. So there's a natural monopoly effect. The question then really is there an abuse of that monopoly position? And that's the thing that governments find very difficult to deal with, how to deal with monopoly providers. And I think it's very difficult as well, if you're the monopoly provider, to then negotiate with the government, because you're now the sole voice saying, I'm representing my industry. Well, actually, my industry is just me. And you start looking very selfish very easily.
That's absolutely correct. I mean, the point is that people have been studying how to deal with and regulate monopolies for a really long time. But also, it's true that this was the Free Basics question was not a question about monopolies. Anyone could have come in and packaged a certain set of websites if they offer and come to an agreement with a specific mobile phone company and said, we will give you these websites free on this particular mobile phone carrier, right? What you've done is you've banned all of that. There was no question of a monopoly here.
And I'd say that point was actually really quite important. From where I sit, a lot of the challenges we deal with are based on the assumption that we will abuse the power that we have. I mean, that's the core assumption. So the assumption in India was if Free Basics was successful, we would somehow then abuse that to shut out other people.
Wikipedia.org is being attacked as well.
You already abused it by weaponizing it.
I think it's a useful critical impulse to have.
No more. Okay. See, by using your platform to lobby for yourself, you already abused your power. So there's already evidence that we abused. What more evidence do I need?
No, power will be abused. That is why regulators exist.
Power might be abused by, for instance, experimenting on users to find out whether or not you can make them sad or happy by altering the content they see just to see if you can. I mean, that is and was an abuse of power, which Facebook did.
I mean, there's a long story to that, which isn't as it was written in the press, let's be really clear. There was
Alex is a tech reporter, by the way.
Yeah. But then you know better. There's a lot behind that.
But one thing I wanted to—I actually have an anthropology background, and I'm quite fixated on this free thing because historically, politically, gifts are frequently used to project power. This is a key technique of power throughout history. With all major chieftains, for example, it's called patronage. You give gifts to people in order to secure a hegemonic position and to get them to perceive you as being the normal and rat way of being. And so, for example, it is possible you could have competition between people giving free gifts, but you basically...
And that would be a terrible thing, right?
It would kind of be like feudal landlords competing for serfs.
Which, of course, definitely used to happen. And when that happened after the... When that happened after the Black Death, you had 100 years of growth.
Okay, we've mentioned the Black Death. Okay. That's always a line for me.
You have competition between feudal landlords. Excellent for the serfs.
All right. Okay. I refuse. We have like 7 minutes here, and I'm going to mention colonialism because I have to. Do we think India has a hang-up about colonialism? I'm not saying colonialism was great. I'm Irish. I get a card on that. It's fine. But do you think now, with access of foreign companies into India, and I'm not just talking about tech, that India has a kind of a worry about exploitation that maybe isn't justified, that the benefits of opening up more aren't being fully realized by an India that maybe remembers nasty times?
We have to, like, in India, we have to fight this battle every 20 years because, when we first became independent, there were a bunch of like, Indian capitalists who went around and said, foreign companies are really bad, but we're awesome, okay? And then when we started opening up the economy in 1991, there were another bunch of capitalists that went around saying, foreign companies, you shouldn't let them in, but we are really good guys, all right? And now, once again, you're beginning to hear about colonialism, in investment into India, and it's like, I'm not sure you can trust, Silicon Valley, but Bangalore's awesome, all right?
Nanda again, I think.
Unlike Mihir, I've actually run a company in a global market and understand competition. So I think he should pipe down a bit.
Actually, you have to say that Nandan is a bad example of this because he's extracted wealth from abroad.
Unlike you, Mihir, I've actually run a company successfully in a global market with extreme competition. So just pipe down on this.
That's what the Tata said in 91.
I think the thing is like this, that I certainly welcome Facebook in India. And I think it's great. I think what they've done with Facebook, with WhatsApp, with Messenger has given so much of things for people. So I have no problem with that. But you have to follow some ground rules. And you, especially when you have a market monopoly position, it's all the more important you follow those ground rules. I think that's where there was a complete failure. And Andreessen's tweet didn't help because when we said this could lead to colonialism, he said, yeah, it's a good thing for you to have colonialism. That is not what he said.
Come on. That is not what he said at all. And
why are you defending Andreessen?
Because I'll tell you, because it is exactly, he needs to be defended. He said that anti-colonialism has made India suffer economically for a long time. Yeah. He did not say colonialism was good. Now, anti-colonialism is what gave us the socialist era. Gave us a bunch of things.
So
and
you're saying
absolutely
the opposition
correct
to,
in saying that.
If you're saying the opposition to Facebook was anti-colonialism, then what Facebook was doing was colonialism.
No.
Yeah.
No, why? Because it was mistaken. It was both mistaken and framed through anti-colonialism.
Let's break it away from Facebook for a second, though, and look.
Yeah,
I mean, India's opposition to, like, you need a cold chain. You live in any major city in India, there's absolutely no large supermarkets, for example. I mean, it seems pretty clear to me, Irishman working for a Japanese-owned UK paper in Mumbai, that Mumbai and India needs more globalization.
And you're Irish.
And I'm Irish, exactly.
No, but I mean, you know, the moment you try and say that you need Walmart in India, for example, all the people...
I'm all for Walmart in India.
But all the people... But the people who are competitors would be the question.
I mean, you look at the corporate raiders...
All the people who are Indian competitors of Walmart and wish to build Indian Walmart will then start saying, but it's terrible. Haven't you heard about Walmart in the United States?
I welcome Facebook in India. So let's be clear about it. I believe in markets. I believe in free markets. I have an issue when a market monopoly position is abused,
and that's exactly what is happening.
That's all.
We agree on that. I'm merely saying that you cannot then say that it is more likely that a foreign company will abuse it. That is, and I'm sure we agree on that as well.
Okay, I think we're going to close this up pretty soon. If there's anyone who has one or two more questions from the crowd, I'm more than open to them. Let's take one here.
You can use the organization.
Hello, my name is Maria Ma. I'm from an energy company, actually, but I find this discussion fascinating. I have a...
Sorry, yeah, I really can't hear anything.
The mic, unfortunately, isn't working.
Testing.
Hi, just to keep it short...
Could
I'll
you
just
remove the headphones, please? So then you'll be
just to keep it short, I'll just ask the question. I want to ask Nandan about what the alternative is, because, for all the negatives that I can see that you've described, still taking away even a small amount of free internet from a large number of people who really cannot afford to pay a subscription for data. I mean, what do you suggest?
No, I think there are several things. The first is increasing competition in the telecom space. As you know, for example, Reliance Jio is coming and they're launching network connectivity at 1/3 or 1/4 the price of current player. That itself is going to crash prices. That's good competitive economics. Second is to have a direct transfer where people get money to buy internet from anybody they want. The third is to popularize Wi-Fi locations. There are lots of choices, but they can be done in a market-neutral way. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, I think we are actually at 6 o'clock, and there'll be a jazz band, and it's warm inside. So I'd like to say, really, thank you very much to all the panelists. A special shout-out to Richard, by the way, who I think was on the receiving end of a lot there.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.